So there's general disclaimers up front. All this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. All this is also based on my experiences. None of these things are set in stone. As I think I've said to a couple of times, if anything, these are a jumping off point. So this is something that's a conversation starter. Every interaction is different. I've had some dominants who required certain protocols, others who had completely contrasting protocols. So every interaction needs to be negotiated appropriately. I am a switch, which means that I have sub energy and dom energy. I have been a sir, and I am currently exploring a sub interaction. Hello, Miss Moo. She's actually the dom of the house. So leather and leather culture is evolving. It's evolving very rapidly. There's a whole generation of people that are coming into kink, and so what would have been considered traditional in the past is changing and being negotiated in a completely different way. It's actually really cool to watch. No one should be judged because their kink or their protocols are different than yours. Everything is open to interpretation, and everything can be negotiated. Last thing is something that I heard Mr. Dickerson say a while back, and I really resonated with me. It said, leather is who I am, kink is how I play. Mm-hmm. Leather works for me because the protocol, the structure, all of it resonates really incredibly well with me, and so that's why it just makes sense. So I organized everything. Wanted to talk about traditional protocols first. And I actually split protocols into three things. Nathan will disagree with me on this, but I call it etiquette versus protocols, because the two things are different in my mind. Attire protocols, or the way that you dress, and then service protocols. And interestingly, I think that there are service for the dom and service for the sub. And the last, we're gonna talk about why all these protocols exist. Yes, sir.
Where does Nathan disagree with you?
So Nathan calls protocols a set of behaviors. For example, Nathan Sir Ivan smokes cigars. And when they go out in public, Ivan will tell Nathan which protocols need to be observed. So there will be a cigar protocol that will be, and so that cigar protocol is an entire set of behaviors. Think of it, a Japanese tea ceremony.
Sure.
So there's this whole set of things that happen, even though it just comes under one title. You just want to flip the volume, the ringer off. Nathan also refers to all of this as service. I split it up, I divide it differently. And for every person that talks about this, there may be a different interpretation. So traditional protocols. There are three levels of protocol that I know about. The first are social protocols, then low protocols, and high protocols. Social protocols are things that happen when you're around the muggles. There is a way of showing respect and being interactive without necessarily setting off alarms in people's heads. So for example, the sub may offer the dominant a drink. Here you are, sir, I saw that your drink was empty. Now, one of the things you'll notice in this is one of the protocols that I was taught and the difference in the pronouns. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good with English.
You is capital Y, and I is lowercase.
Is lowercase.
Yes.
So I had a dom who required the use of emphasized pronouns.
Mm-hmm. That was a common one.
It is.
Very common. Having to text sir in all caps.
Mm-hmm. Another example of that. Low protocols. These are protocols that are typically observed in private, or at home, among your friends. People that are familiar with what's going on. So in this case, the sub would bring the dom a drink. Here you are, sir. I saw that your drink was empty. But the sub would offer the drink to the dominant with his head bowed. For a high protocol, so these are things that are observed under formal occasions and are probably the most extreme demonstration of service. So in this case, the sub would bring the dom a drink. Here you are, sir. I saw that your drink was empty. But the sub would then take a knee and would present the drink and may be expected to hold his arms in that position with the drink at the ready until the Dom decides to take it. And that could be 2 minutes, it could be a half an hour.
And the drink's flat.
And that ice melts, and damn, what am I going to do with all this liquor? Traditional social protocols, some specific examples. The cell will serve the Dom, but doesn't kneel during the scene, basically getting things for him, making sure that he's not distracted. The sub's collars typically remain hidden, so it's not obvious. The sub will inform the Dom where he is going. Sir, I'm going to go to the bathroom. They will refer to the Dom with his title, and then the dominant will refer to the sub by his name. And then, of course, the submissive is free to speak to whoever he wants to and engage in social discourse at his leisure. Low protocols take that to the next level. The sub will serve the Dom, but may not necessarily kneel during service. However, the sub is rarely allowed to sit on the furniture and is expected to sit just to the sir's right side. Well, to the sir's dominant side. So for me, it was always to the right. So he would sit on the floor next to the sir. Hello, Miss Moo. Yes, ma'am. We all know that you run the roost. We'd sit there and wait on sir at his leisure. The sub collar would be exposed, and then the sub's attire may be negotiated based on where they are and what's going on. The sub would request to be excused from the Dom's presence. Sir, I need to go to the bathroom. May I? The sub will refer to the Dom with his title and his name, and then the Dom will refer to the sub by title and name. The sub is allowed to speak freely, but only to other subs. They would never engage another dominant unless they were spoken to first. And then, of course, the sub is responsible for opening all doors and making sure that the sir's gloves remain untouched. Why is that important?
Because they're his.
Yes, so it could be a respect thing, but let's flash back 60 years before the wonderful world of Purell.
Oh, germs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was very important that the sub opened doors, opened drinks, opened food, anything that could be contaminated or have germs. It was very important that the sub managed that for the dominant, because it's extremely important that the dominant's hands remain clean, because breath control, fisting, edging, blood play, needle play, all of these are things that have the potential to be very dangerous to the sub if the dominant's hands are dirty. So, this rule, the bottom rule, was a health risk in addition to being a protocol. High protocols. These are exhausting for both the dominant and the sub.
Yes, I did high protocol with one sub, and we had an hour into it, I was like, okay, we're done.
I'm done.
I'm done. Uh-huh. I don't even care what people think, we're done.
Right. It's exhausting.
Yes.
So in these particular circumstances, the sub will actually remain a little bit. The sub will kneel during service. And the sub will be required to be in parade rest when in the dominant's presence. Again, always at one step behind and to the dominant side. The sub's collar is exposed, and of course the attire could be negotiated based on the occasion. The sub will remain in the Dom's presence until he is dismissed. And I don't care how bad you gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna tie it in a knot, and you're gonna stand there until the Dom says, you're done.
Or piss yourself.
Or, I wouldn't recommend that. Because that gear's fucking expensive.
I have seen subs that are not in the diaper plate put on a diaper for high quality.
That would not surprise me. It's high protocol can be a lot. Especially for extended engagements.
Yeah, that was one way they worked it out.
Right. The Dom would be referred to by his title and his given name, and the sub is only referred to by his title. The sub will not engage in discourse with anyone else unless he is spoken to directly. The old adage that the voice should be seen and not heard, that's classic example of all this. Again, the sword's gonna, the sub is going to open all the doors and make sure that the dom's gloves are not touched. And the sub will also hold all objects for the dominant. And this can go on for gloves.
So, like, if the dom is drinking something, the sub will hold the drink.
Will hold the drink.
Yes.
Or a jacket. Well, I mean, not necessarily pour it in his mouth, but he would hold the drink for the dominant. And again, there are protocols that, depending on the negotiation, there may be a posture for that. So the dom may require that the sub hold the drink, arms out, or kneeling, or on knees, or however they negotiate that. And again, that's one dominant to the next, just however, whatever that protocol looks like for them. But holding objects would mean jackets, cards. If cards were exchanged, then the submissive would actually take the card from the dominant. The dominant would never extend his hand. Everything is done for the dominant from a step behind him, so you better have monkey arms.
Also, you better know how to read your dom.
There are lots of protocols that exist from hand signals. A lot of communication seemed almost mind reading. I've seen some submissives that looked like, holy cow, how did you, what? But changes in Sura's position, changes in head, hand motions, all of these things were trained into the sub to respond to and to make sure the dominant was taken care of.
Can I interrupt?
Please do.
So we went to one dinner and we were going to do high protocol for the first time ever.
Uh-huh.
We started a month early on training.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can just do.
No. And protocols will differ from individual to individual.
Yes. And we were doing like the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Something to look nice. And then I was like, we got an hour into this thing and I was like, I can't.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. I was like, I'm totally drained. I can't even feel like I want to eat or anything. And I'm like, this.
For lifestyle slaves, this also works into just their day-to-day training.
Right.
Yes.
Low protocol is the most common. I would say it makes up 75% of any type of protocol. House protocol is another word for that. High protocols, you're going to see at IML. You're going to see at MAL. You're going to see at high formal gatherings.
Usually the dinners.
Yeah, big dinners. Anything where there's going to be high cal.
I've only met one caliber.
No, no. High cal leather.
Leather. High cal.
Oh, got it. Okay.
All leather.
I met one
sorry.
Sub and Dom that did it 20. They did it every time they went to the bar with high protocol.
Yeah.
Wow.
How they did it, I don't know.
It
looked exhausting just watching them. But once they get used to it, it's.
I can say that I get it. Because protocol and structure and this happens next, this is step, this is the next thing, this is the next thing. Because that makes sense in my head, I get it.
See,
so protocol for me makes perfect sense.
That's the reason I can't do protocol, because my mind don't work that way.
Right.
My mind works, I'm by the moment.
Right.
So I don't think before I do.
I would say you can't do it.
I can,
it's
but
just
it's
harder for
yes,
you to grasp it.
Yeah.
There's a focus effort to it, for sure.
I have some that I'd be happy to teach you that work well for the RPAC kind of personality.
Yeah, but the one that got me was not being able to pick up my own drink or pick up something because I'm thirsty.
Right.
It's so hard not to just reach for it. And
that was a common argument in the household when Knox was collared to us, because I'm so used to just, I've been my own person for years. And it was really, I mean, there's a couple of times that he gave me some serious stink eye because I opened a door. So, yeah, there are different protocols will happen. Different things will be different. Everything will be negotiated at each level.
What I do with my slaves when I'm in the mood for a beverage, I just do a hand signal just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they take care of it.
All that's training and association.
Yeah.
All right. So I split these up. I call it etiquette versus protocols. Mm-hmm. Etiquette is manners. Etiquette is what your mother should have taught you. These are general behaviors that are used in polite company. And some examples, like, don't touch somebody without asking. Never, ever grab someone's collar.
Mm-mm.
If you don't know what's around their neck, don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not theirs. That is the responsibility that they have been given to maintain for the person who has collared them. That's primary obligation number one. Don't touch it. Something that's a little eclectic, again, growing up Southern, you introduce people based on a hierarchy. So I would have introduced the matriarch of the family. So I would introduce myself first. Hi, my name is Todd. This is this person. And then it follows down the row until it got to me. And so I would do older siblings before younger siblings. And I grew up in the South. I went through cotillion. Cotillion is the thing where a young person is introduced into society, and there's this whole mess of manners that are taught. Here I've given an example of something that would work for me. So, hi, my name is Todd. This is my sir, Dominic. Knox was the alpha for us for a long time. So this is Pup Knox. And then this is my collar brother. He is an equal. And then Pup Bullet, who is the omega. Pup Bullet is getting us drinks. Now, this is a frustration for anybody who has come from a different background than I was in. How the hell am I supposed to know how to do that? So, when in doubt, always consider the golden rule first.
Mm-hmm.
How would I want someone else to treat me? If you can process any action through that filter, what you may not know the etiquette, but 9 times out of 10, you're going to get it. Simply because you can figure out, what do I want to be treated as? And then I treat other people that way. Does that make sense? So, what are some etiquettes that you know about, or some etiquettes that you practice?
Excuse me after you sneeze.
Okay.
Bless you.
Sure. Speaking to someone as a courtesy during following a sneeze or something like, or cough, something like that.
It's a common one.
Mm-hmm.
Eye contact when you speak with somebody.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at someone when you talk to them.
If you bump into somebody, say excuse me.
If you bump into somebody, say excuse me.
Keeping a reasonable distance from talking.
Yeah.
Not
right in front of somebody's face. Right.
If you're unsure, politely asking, pardon me, is this where this is?
Right. So, Cody, I don't know that I offended you, but I rubbed you the wrong way a few weeks back. So, describe why that happened.
I read incorrectly.
Okay. So, as an etiquette, so you read incorrectly, and the incorrect thing that you read was that I assumed
that I was a boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sorry,
in an etiquette form, what's a way to avoid that?
Introduce myself as a sir.
What? But if you don't know, I've never met you before.
Yeah, so when I introduce myself, sir, Cody.
Okay, or I, as an individual, can always assume that the person is a step above me. So you immediately extend respect to the person that you're meeting until they can be identified in the hierarchy. So, good afternoon, sir, can I help you? Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Always assume, golden rule, how does that apply to the interaction? So, yes.
It's easy to correct. Like,
mm-hmm.
for instance, the other night I was going to Bose and, you know, I was full formal. And
sure.
I'm cutting through an alley and some, I don't know, I think they're speakers. They came up and they were like, you know, hey, sir, can you help me out, sir? And they kept
mm-hmm.
saying sir over and over and over again. And I was like, it's boy, here's a cigarette, leave me alone.
Right.
But
right.
It was just a simple, you know,
mm-hmm.
hey, here's, we correct it.
Right.
I've noticed
from
that
day-to-day life,
females
sir,
are
man,
a lot more
big
on this.
Yes.
They are big on protocol and etiquette. Like, they will literally go up and they will not talk to someone unless, so let's say she's a submissive, she will not go up and talk to anyone until her master goes over and talks to them. And then this one girl was like asking me 15 million questions just to, so she could be polite.
Right.
So it was getting to the point where we could have a nice conversation, but the protocols kind of got in the way.
They can. And I will tell you that that is an individual thing, and it will change from person to person.
Yes. I just noticed it more with the females. Because they like things more.
But on that, always assume someone is a step above you.
Yes.
It's a lot easier to amend addressing someone who is of a lesser than someone of a higher.
Correct.
Because she called me master, and I was like, I consider myself a dom. So.
Right.
Until I get capped, and then I change my title.
Sure. So, etiquette is something that everybody does. Etiquette is polite behavior. Etiquette is universal. Protocols change. A protocol is a behavior that happens that is defined by an interaction between a dominant and a submissive. Okay? This is not the sub's job to anticipate the dominant's protocols. If the dominant gets upset at you because you didn't do something, it is not your job if he didn't tell you. It's not your responsibility. The dominant is important for the dominant to communicate those expectations. And if there is a question, ask. When I started interacting with Dominic, for example, I asked him about pronouns. Sir, do you prefer the use of capitalized and lowercase pronouns? And his answer was, no, that's fine. You can address me like you want to. Yes, sir. So it is not the sub's job to read the dom's mind. The dominant should always share his protocols with the sub and explain them clearly. The behaviors are always negotiated. Sometimes it's not going to work. I am not going to call somebody something and you're cute and all, but if that's what you require, this interaction isn't going to work for us. How about if we swap it for this? Back and forth. It's always a conversation, a power exchange between the two parties. In my opinion, every protocol should have a purpose. Protocols should not be there to degrade the boy or the submissive. It should not be there to inflate the dominant's ego. Every protocol should have a purpose. For example, we required Knox to ask permission before he played with anybody else. Why?
STDs.
Okay, it's a safety precaution for us.
That way you know who he's getting involved with in case
there's and where he'll be.
Lesser right, character. That's correct. There was also a lesson to teach Knox. When Knox came into our family, shy is probably the nicest word I can use to describe him. He had a hard time talking about what he wanted and what he needed. Everything was just yes sir, yes sir, yes sir. Which, if somebody's just playing a yes man, you know it. So the expectation was, we want you to talk about what you want. Therefore, the rule is, when you want something, when you want sex, you have to talk about it. So every protocol, every rule should have some purpose behind it that does not degrade the individual or simply overinflate the dominant's ego. For example, subs will walk a step behind and on the dominant side of the dominant. Why is that a good rule?
It shows that you two are together.
Okay, so it connects the two people. Go ahead.
If he needs to smack you.
Okay.
When someone being a brat.
Right.
It shows a hierarchy.
It shows a hierarchy.
It's easier on etiquette because then you know where everyone stands when they walk straight up.
Sure.
If you need to be of service to your dom, you're on his right side.
You can see what the dom needs just about the same time that he sees that he needs it.
Also, you know where your sub is at all times.
Right. There are occasions where a dominant will take on a submissive, and that role is protective, like literally protective. It is important for the dominant to be in that position because he needs to see what's coming.
Yes.
The sub will wait at the door when entering the Dom's house for the Dom to acknowledge and admit him. Why?
It's respect for the castle.
Okay, respect for the house.
So you know there's no uninvited guests along with.
Okay, so everyone sees, you see who's coming into the house, you know who's there.
No random strangers.
Because the sub might be a vampire?
Always a risk. Especially if it's a redhead.
That's our biggest issue now. Vampires.
There are occasions where the dominant is mentoring someone who is going through a rough time. It may be necessary for the dominant to inspect the sub prior to coming into the house. Where have you been? What have you been up to? Are you in your right mind? Mm-hmm. Are you in a place where you can actually come in and serve?
On the other end of that, the dom might be busy doing something personal, like talking to someone personally, and you just don't want someone randomly walking in.
Also true.
They could also be preparing the playroom.
There could be lots of reasons, yep. Mm-hmm. Lastly, the sub, of course, we talked about this. The sub will request permission to play prior to engaging in any sexual activity.
Something else I would add to protocol? Mm-hmm. When you're thinking of protocols, fantasy's nice, but keep it realistic. That's one that I learned really quick. Oh, this would be so hot, but then I was like, that's not realistic at all.
Right. This is going to get painful.
Yeah.
So, Cody, you were talking about a protocol that had worn you out, but wasn't realistic.
The one that we tried was when I come home from work, because I came home at the same time every day, he'd be naked.
Okay.
It backfired when someone showed up before me. And they opened the door naked.
Yep.
Because they forgot to look. And I was like, yeah, we can't do this no more.
All right. So there are some protocols that don't work.
Yeah.
Some protocols that will evolve. So there are some things that used to work, things that were necessary that don't work anymore. Eric, what are some of the protocols that you've been under?
Ones I like or ones I don't like?
Give me one of each and talk about why either they worked or they didn't work.
Well, actually, most of them, I enjoyed most of them because I saw the reasoning behind it, and I was allowed to question it and get a deeper understanding as to why it was.
Sure.
The one I really did not like, I won't say their name, and I'm embarrassed to say this, so don't just leave the room. I had to wear panties, and didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to emasculate, it was just because that's what they were into, and I didn't like it.
But they're so uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah. And I had this conversation with multiple women. I'm like, wedgie thing, yeah. So I hated that. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the purpose of it.
Right.
And I never got a clear answer on it, but
I get that.
I felt I did it.
Forced feminization is a kink for some people. Mm-hmm. So what are some
you look so pretty.
As you look forward into your life as dominant or as submissives, what are some protocols that you would like to see observed?
Understanding of, at least from a submissive standpoint, understanding the reason why or their persona themselves, because that was actually an issue I ran into with my first, I will say master, is because he lost sight of what my purpose was when I first went into that. It was a lifestyle, it was a lifestyle master-slave relationship. And I told him my main purpose is, yes, I will be playful, yes, I can be a boy at times, but I'm mainly there as a bodyguard, as someone to, when out and about, will protect. And he lost sight of that.
Okay.
So that's one thing as far as protocols that would be more or less, you should take note in maintaining their persona as well as your roles.
So as a guard, as a guard boy, what would be a protocol that you would observe? If you could come up with your own idea, what would that look like?
2 steps back, 1 side to their dominant side, as well as not spoken unless spoken to, and in need of emergency, jumping to action against any other outstanding orders.
Okay. Rain, as a dominant, what's something that you would like to see from a submissive?
I haven't really thought about it, which is why I think this talk is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a long-term sub or slave or anything like
mm-hmm.
that, and protocol has never been part of how I've played,
mm-hmm.
so I don't have an answer.
Okay.
This is good.
Also, another big issue is, and I'm going to say one of my downfalls with my first relationship is, I'd make protocols, but I wouldn't enforce them, and that was one of the big issues that I had. Because I'm forgetful.
Tony?
For a long time, I disdained protocols. And it wasn't until I met my slave, Bob, that I suddenly realized that I was missing out on a lot. I'm not really sure where to put mine, but whenever we're in public situations, if I'm out being Papa Tony, then there's not a lot of protocols. But there are times where we intentionally go out and go into the highest protocol level that I can do, and we do a lot of hand signals, and he thrives on it because I'm very consistent. I mean, I'm a really good doggy daddy. I'm great at training dogs because I'm really consistent. But what I did is that I made agreements with him saying, "This, when I do this, what does it mean? When I do this, what does it mean?" So, like, for instance, in my case, I picked a lot of these up from Butchman's experience in Arizona, where if I take my pointy finger and my fuck you finger and cross them over and then shake from left to right, that's sign language for RR, meaning restroom. And it means you're going to be drinking my piss pretty soon. But I like doing that in front of other sirs who may not know that signal, but I like explaining it to them. It gives the slave an extra thrill, going, "Ho, ho, ho, the other sirs got to see me, I'm going to do my stuff." Sometimes in the middle of the bar, sometimes off in the bathroom. Or, for instance, as I said, acting like I'm holding a glass and tilting it towards my head means I'm thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
Or slap the side of the leg, then that means drop your knees, wrap around. Bob loves that. His nickname is Tourniquet Bob. Yeah. If I slap the chest, it means put your arms around me and nuzzle and maul me like you just can't get enough of me, which he usually would like to do anyways, and I'll totally ignore him, which he loves, because I'm doing talk with other tops, and I've got this guy climbing me like a mountain. He gets really turned on by that. But one of the things is you take three fingers, press it in the middle of his chest, and he nods, indicating that the order is fulfilled, and it means don't move. I'm going to head off for a while, but when I come back, I'm going to find you here. You can move around, but one foot's got to stay where it is. Or one recent one that we haven't been doing a lot of is where I take my thumb and put it between my two, you know, longest fingers and kind of shake it at him. That means get on your face, get on your hands and knees, and put your face between my boots until I say otherwise. The standard release is you grab, like, the Vulcan button, death pinch, but just gentle squeeze releases from whatever position they're in. Two fingers is present, you know, that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of little signals, but I test them to make sure that they're clear on my different submissives, that what these signals mean, and that means do it right now. There's no hesitation, no question, just do it. Because a lot of it is them showing off to the other sirs that, yes, I am this kind of a submissive for my sir. So I could go on and on and on, but that's my experience.
It also doesn't have to be hand signals. It could be verbal commands as well.
Mm.
So learning hand signals to try and use is fine and all, but it may not always go to the perception of the submissive, because they might have ADD just as bad as you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to learn the one for stay here, because you've all seen me.
Yeah.
There is a puppet handler that live up in Seattle, and the handler does all of his commands in German.
I was going to say,
mm-hmm.
that's a good way to do it. Use a
mm-hmm.
different language. That
mm-hmm.
way the commands are not just plain English.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning German right now. I just love it.
It's actually really cool to watch them interact with each other.
It's great.
And it's really rewarding to see.
Those
and the pup actually loves it.
Mm-hmm.
So it, as a from my boy space, being following orders and following the protocol and making sure the sir is taken care of, especially in public,
mm-hmm.
is extremely satisfying.
You also need to know what type of sir you are.
Exactly.
Because, like, the one following me around,
mm-hmm.
no one can keep up with me usually.
What?
Right.
They can, but
They usually get lost by having to shove through people.
Yes. So it's easier if I just say, hey, stay in this general area,
mm-hmm.
I'll be back.
Right.
Eventually.
What's going to be really funny is when you run across a sub who cannot run you.
Ah. Well, I have one. I have one secret protocol, and this is the first time I'm telling you guys.
Oh, no, you met Adam. You met my past pup. He can outrun me.
Mm-hmm.
Me and him can run now.
Circles around each other.
Yeah, we can run circles around each other, because he's just as social as he's socialer than I am. Adam?
Tony?
I know.
I was going to say, nearly all of my protocols that I've developed over the years have been nonverbal, but there's one that's really nonverbal that I've never told anybody else, is that if I raise one eyebrow at him, it means I'm proud of you, you're doing great, I am pleased. Because he needs to know that periodically, that he's on the right track, because he worries, am I screwing it up in some way? But I'm acknowledging his service, but I'm doing it in a nonverbal way.
Mm-hmm.
So, we made that one up.
So, dressing the part. Another type of protocol is your attire. And this is something that I came to along the way. The difference between public, private, and formal dress for boys. Public dress would be a black and white t-shirt. And anybody who's seen me out at the Eagle will see me wear this pretty often. So it's a white t-shirt, my black vest, a pair of jeans, and my boots. I don't wear a hat. That's just not my thing, and I minimize the amount of leather that I wear. So I usually will wear my cuff or my vest, and that's it. In private, I know that Mr. Dickerson requires that his boys wear their collar and they have ankle and wrist cuffs, and that's it. That's what they wear when they're in the house at Mr. Dickerson's house in service.
Mm-hmm.
Formal dress. So subs may wear full leathers when in formal occasions. They do need to make sure that their hat is appropriate if they're going to wear it. So they can wear either a garrison cap, which is the little foldy, I don't know what to call it.
The piss cutter?
You're talking about the kepi?
The piss cutter.
Okay.
No, I don't think it's the piss cutter, not the one that's the mohawk.
You're talking about the Confederate cap?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would call that a miner's cap. That's what I referred to.
Okay, that's what I thought we were talking about.
That's
the piss
cutter. It's the army cover.
The garrison cover.
Yeah. So those two are the types of hats that a boy typically would wear. If you'll notice, I also indicated that boys are not allowed to wear gloves.
Hmm.
Dominant attire. Hmm. There are very few rules about what a dominant should wear while in public. The two that I know for sure would be a mirror cap and gloves. Those are the two things that I know would always be consistent on a dominant.
What's a mirror cap? Is that the
That's that motorcycle helmet.
Okay.
Yep, motorcycle cap. Interesting thing, and very something that isn't known very well, is the difference between a full harness and a half harness. And these comes in different styles. This is a full harness. So this is my full harness.
Yes, because it goes around your cock.
It goes all the way down. And it attaches to a cock ring. Well, seriously, this is the strap that goes through the crack of my ass. And this attaches to a cock ring on the front end.
Mirror cap.
So this is what a full harness would be, and this is worn by the sub. A half harness would be if I took the connector straps off.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a half harness, and those are worn by the dominants.
And that's always?
That is the general rule. Now remember, we're back to the fact that what used to apply to our culture 30 years ago is no longer applicable.
Okay.
Because all of these things are accessible via www. And can be purchased by anybody along the way.
And some people don't look up what they're buying before.
That's also very true. Yep.
We met a gentleman
that came over the cap because he wanted to
your prerogative
of the culture, and he
right.
had no idea what he was telling the bar.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, since nothing is absolute, it's always a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I see you're wearing a mirror cap. Where did you get it?
That's
so
pretty much how we found out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we taught him how to wear it. Because he was like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happened with me when I went with you.
Uh-huh. and then there's
collar.
So traditionally leather was earned. And so it is logical to say that the more leather a person had, the more experienced they were. Again, that is not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. Somebody can walk in and high cow and not know shit. So just use it as a conversation starter. Individual interactions and protocols for dress will change. For example, I don't have a meerkat. I have not been covered. But if I did, Sir's rule is that I am not allowed to wear a meerkat while I am with Sir. Mm-hmm. He is the one that gets to wear the Sir's cap. I don't get to put that on. So that creates the hierarchy for the two of us when we are together. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So
it also helps with etiquette.
It does.
We're meeting people.
Protocol. Yep. Yeah, and that will be different if I ever were to engage another dominant. That would be different for them. Mm-hmm. Some general do's and don'ts. A leatherman should always be clean. Shower regularly. Take care of yourself. Clean your nails. There are those that like the body scent and musk. Please make sure that you negotiate that appropriately. Walking into a bar smelling like 2 weeks of piss is probably not the best way to start an interaction. Yes,
that,
George?
That's a, like, when Todd and I had started our thing, I'm very much into natural scent and unshaven and everything. But I submitted and allowed me to wear deodorant and shave my balls and everything, which is totally not what I would normally do. But it also goes down to willingness. How willing are you to negotiate?
And again, it's a negotiation back and forth.
I like the musky.
I do too.
I used to be into scenting. And then I had a really bad experience.
I keep mine.
I could only imagine.
It
after working with machinists and
mm-hmm.
other mechanics in a maintenance bay out in the field for about 3 weeks
mm-hmm.
to a month to 3 months.
Yeah, it gets really bad.
Yes, I can deal with it. I like to send it myself.
Yeah, me too.
Right.
That's my biggest downfall. I like my smell. So
I would never leave the house.
No, I literally sleep like this.
So negotiate that. If it's something that you're into, speak to the sub or speak to the dom about figuring out what that balance looks like. Don't mix brown and black leathers. This includes your boots. Some leathers are colored, so that has become very trendy recently. Mixing colored leather with black leather is very acceptable. Try not to mix your gold brass with your chrome, your silver accents. Keep the accents to a minimum. You don't necessarily want to walk out looking like Wonder Woman.
Ding!
Maybe a dungeon.
I know, right?
I will make you speak.
Hair and beards need to be kept neat. That doesn't necessarily have to mean short, but they do need to be neat. And keep your flags on one side or the other. Now, I have seen people walk out and walk into a bar looking like they've got a peacock tail.
That's a little excessive.
It's a little much. Pick something. It's okay to be versatile. It's okay to be able to give and to receive. 9 times out of 10, when I walk out the door, I know what I'm looking for when I get there. So that's what I'm going to put into the universe. So flag something. If you're going to flag, keep it on one side. It makes it very clear to everybody you're interacting with. Tony?
I don't normally share this, but you may have noticed that my mirror cap has gold.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is that I sat down and tried to think and tried to add it up. But over the last few decades, I have trained sirs up to the point of earning their master's cap, probably 36, somewhere between 36 or so, mm-hmm. you know, times. And I feel that just like back when I was in the Navy, gold meant you were a senior officer. So that's all. That's why I have gold. Normally it would be silver.
Right. And we discussed at Palm Springs Leather Pride that what I knew is that the trim,
mm-hmm.
silver trim on a mirror cap indicated a sir,
mm.
and a lack of that trim indicated a submissive.
And that was the first time I'd ever heard it in my life.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard that one.
It's again, it's one of the things that is, it's just what I was trained as, and it will be different for every group. But again, it's a conversation starter.
Yeah, because 40 years ago, we didn't do that at all. And I trust that things have changed, and I'm okay with that. And I'm just saying that in the old days, we used to laugh when, say, the local gay newspaper would come out during Leather Pride Week, and there'd be some Twinkies who'd never touched leather before in their lives modeling in somebody's borrowed gear,
right.
And they'd be wearing hugely mixing signals, meerkat mixed with collar mixed with everything else, and it's just like, this is a fashion statement for them, sigh. Yeah. But they couldn't show any real leather folk on the cover because it would scare people away because they wanted lots of people to grab it.
Grab, they went,
so it was
they
less threatening to have, you know, little shaved Twinkies.
So, if they wear the key, so anyone don't know, if they wear the keys on the right, they're submissive, left is dominant. What did they wear on both sides?
This.
They would, well, that's, I would, in my tradition, I wouldn't do that. Because it's conflicting.
Yeah, it says keep your flags on one side or the other.
The janitor.
Well, here's... What's the difference?
That was my mentor's joke when he did the protocol.
Oh, when he did, yeah. What's the difference between showing your keys and not showing your keys?
What's this?
One's DD, one's not.
Eric?
Close. Or one that I would have heard was, I have a car. I need a car. I have a house. Need a place to crash.
Okay.
Oh. Mm.
But if you were, so if your keys were tucked in, it means you're not looking.
Oh.
So keys clipped on your belt on your left side, but tucked into your pocket, said, I'm dominant, but I got somebody at home I can't play. Again, little things.
I've also seen keys be used as a flag for one to be fucked on a vehicle.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's, when you look back at the subtleties of the language that our forefathers had to experience just to get laid, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And now we have,
but a lot of it's made up, too. The whole hanky code is a devastating joke to those of us that were around back in the 70s.
Who actually understood what was going on.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Almost done. So... I actually refer to service as a separate part of protocols. Mm-hmm. Protocols are things that you do because of someone. Service is what you do for someone.
Mm-hmm.
So service is basically actions from the submissive in order to help the dominant in his day-to-day life. A submissive, this one's for you, right? A submissive service doesn't end in the bedroom. It doesn't have to end in the bedroom. It can, but... A submissive service can extend into all portions of the dominant's life based on the negotiation of that interaction. To me, service is not protocol, because these are things that you would do for them regardless of what they made you wear, where you are standing, so on and so forth. For some dominants, these service behaviors are expected and can be negotiated as part of the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the sub will open all the doors for the dominant. The sub removes the dom's boots at the end of the evening. That's actually one of my favorite protocols. One of my favorite things to do. And the sub will actually get drinks for the dominant. All of these are things that you do for the dominant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that is a protocol. It's not something you do because the dominant told you to. It's how you serve them.
Another thing that comes to mind is going back to what I mentioned earlier about the sub's persona as far as what they are. Like with me and my first master, it was I was there to be that guard slave, that basically the guard dog of the house.
Yep.
And that would be one of the parts of the persona that would fit into service.
The service protocol. Yeah. Submissives are not the only ones that serve. Dominants also serve the sub. So. Mm-hmm. Dominants provide things to the sub in exchange for the service that the sub provides to the dominant. So the dominant could provide protection, education, training, guidance, structure, mentorship. All of these are things that the dominant has to offer the submissive. A good dominant has a myriad of activities or a myriad of skills that he can offer a sub. And the larger... Sex may not be one of them. Interestingly enough, Boy Patrick, who was the International Community Bootblack last year, grew up among female dominants. No sex, ever. He was taught all of his boy protocols by females. So sex is not required in order for there to be a power exchange in that relationship. And a dominant, surprise, is not required to be a top. It's actually kind of hot to find a submissive top. That's actually a lot of fun. A dominant should always strive to earn the respect and the trust of the submissive, because what the sub is offering can often be life-threatening, especially in some of the kink play. Learning to get the respect, and the deeper that respect, and the deeper that trust, the more submission that the sub will be willing to offer you, which increases the strength of the relationship. For example, the dom could teach leather care, or could teach kink play. They could provide daily structure. These are the orders for what you will do when you get home. This is how you will manage your money. This is what you will do that is part of a structure to keep a person's life in order. This is actually something that I have heard about, I haven't seen, but a dominant can actually take in a boy who was part of an abusive relationship, mm-hmm. and will actually literally protect the boy. So that type of interaction exists, and it is an available type of power exchange. George?
When we first started working together, you took on a very similar role with that with me. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily as taking me in, but very much mentoring me through some very difficult times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Bits and pieces.
I always find subs, there's always something wrong with them.
Say it one more time.
I always find the broken subs that need help with something.
If you're looking for a perfect sub, you're never going to find one.
Never going to find it. We're all crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for baggage that goes with mine.
We got to have the same baggage. They got to match.
Tony, go ahead.
Well, the line where it says a dom should always strive to earn the sub's respect and trust, I totally agree, and it's something you have to do every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But then you talk about the exact opposite, the clown that comes up to a submissive in the bar and says, kneel, slave,
right.
and has no credibility whatsoever, mm-hmm. and everybody laughs at him because he doesn't know this.
Right.
Yeah.
George?
And even extending after our first interactions mm-hmm. had happened and ended, you maintained that relationship in helping me through more stuff that mm-hmm. you didn't have to. And yeah.
You don't have to be collared to somebody.
No, I know.
In order to mentor them.
Mm-hmm. But I'm just speaking to mm-hmm. your ability as a dom and well as a switch, but as a dom to me.
Thank you.
If I may ask, how has that been for you? How has your life changed since you met him?
Oh, it's changed a lot. There have been times where I learned deeply about what I am capable of handling and boundaries that I need to set in place when I'm feeling hurt. I was very my communication with Todd was very open. And I learned how to be a lot more vulnerable with a man that I didn't know how to do that. I learned about expectations and where I can have them and where I shouldn't have them. I learned about how to interact with a couple where I'm only sexually active with one of them. Yeah, there was the whole experience was a learning experience.
So your life would be very different if you had not met.
Oh. Well, Todd and I's relationship started like 4 or 5 years ago. We had chatted for a very long time online, and it didn't come into fruition until about 2 years ago when we finally met. So it had been a brewing experience, but yeah, that it was extremely powerful for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The reason why I'm asking is because when someone proves that they're worth it, worth the energy, worth the expenditure, you know, of time, and you know, they could easily be doing something else. When somebody trusts you enough to let them into their lives and to do that mentoring and that, it says a lot about you too. I mean, clearly he's had a huge benefit in your life, but I assert that the power that he has transferred into your life and the understanding and all that other stuff is still going to be ricocheting around in the world long after he and I are both gone. It's a wonderful feeling. So.